It's all at 388 Atlantic Avenue. The doors open at 6 for shorts and features are at 7:30. Become a WBAI buddy and get in free. Oh, and we'll have wine and popcorn, too.
Hi, this is Julian Joiello, and I'm a listener and supporter of WBAI.
All right, hang on, Julian. We don't have time for your little message right now because it's time for Sugar in My Bowl with Joyce Jones here at WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, streaming live at WBAI.org.
On Sunday, September 14th at 11 p.m., Sugar in My Bowl presents percussionist and band leader Steve Kroon. Join us as we discuss Steve's career and his latest release as a leader, On the One. That's Sunday, September 14th at 11 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web.
So sad. I want a little steam on my clothes. Maybe I can fix things up so they'll go. What's the matter, Daddy? Come on, save my soul. I need some sugar in my bowl.
Listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Sugar My Bowl's the name of this program. My name's Joyce Jones, and tonight's guest is percussionist, band leader Steve Kroon. And I'd like to extend our condolences to the Joe Sample family on his transition. We'll be presenting a rebroadcast next week on the 21st. Stay tuned. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl, coming up now.
Maybe I can fix things up so they'll go. What's the matter, Daddy? Come on, save my soul. I want some sugar.
Well, first off, I want to ask you, what was that? Because it was sounding like a Charles Stepney production.
No, it's a group from back in the day called Opa. And these guys were from Montevideo. And some of them back up Milton Nascimento. And some of them also backed up Aerto.
I was just going to say Aerto.
Remember the Yabo Fingers?
Yes.
Well, they were the ones that backed him up.
Yes.
Puterosso Brothers and Ruben. And they do that candomblé. Man, they're really masterful, incredible musicians. Okay. And every once in a while, I got to go back and put on their stuff because it's still so fresh.
Actually, one of my Facebook buddies, Greg Kaz, he's a DJ, and he introduced me to them.
Opa.
That's OPA, right?
Correct.
Right.
And, yeah, they had, I believe, two CDs.
Uh-huh.
And they're both killing, man. Oh.
Yeah. I actually have to get my hands on those. When he told me about it, I was looking, and I just didn't get back to actually getting it, but I'm going to get it now, definitely.
Oh, you got to get it.
I mean, I know. They sound great.
This is something that's worth going back and listening to.
That's for sure.
Well, that time and that era was amazing anyway.
With music in general.
Yeah, music all across the board. It seems like everybody, it seemed like that was what, the beginning of the 80s?
I think it was just before, the beginning. End of the 70s, beginning of the 80s.
Coming out of the 70s and going to the 80s, that's when you had all the real hip this and the weather report. And Santana was recording some incredible stuff. Man.
Yes.
And everybody was on top of the game. Everything just seemed to be at a whole other level, man. And not only musically, but lyrically. They were talking about spirituality.
Yes.
And, you know, it was just an amazing time. And I can't believe that we've left that and come to this.
Oh, my goodness. You know, we should probably get started just so people know. My name's Joyce Jones, and I'm on the line with
Stephen Croon.
Stephen Croon, thank you so much for joining Sugar in My Bowl.
Sugar in your bowl, ain't that sweet?
We are so glad to have you.
I'm so honored to be here with you.
You know, I also want to thank Karen Taylor, because she was the one who sort of inadvertently got us back together from having met at the celebration for Pete El Conde Rodriguez at Lincoln Center Out of Doors.
Correct.
And you were part of Karen Taylor's house band of her Riffs and Race, Love and War production.
Which was a lot of fun and very interesting.
It was at the Flamboyant Theater at Clemente, which was part of the Fringe Festival. How'd you get to be involved in that production anyway?
Karen.
Uh-huh.
I saw her at BAM, I believe Onaje was playing there. And she came to me, she said, Steve, I'm doing this play at such a time, and I would love to have you play percussion, blah, blah, blah. Would you be interested? I said, absolutely. And when I found out who the musicians were, too, wow. I mean, it was a great cast of musicians.
Yes, so, Marcus Prisciani.
Keyboards. Lenny Plaxico.
Yeah, on bass, Lonnie Plaxico. And what's the guitarist's name? I always have moments with his name.
That's the first time I met him.
Kelvin Bell.
Yeah. What a great player. What a nice guy, man.
Yeah, that was a great production. I saw a production earlier, but this was sort of like the new and improved version of Riffs on Race, Love, and War. So the next time Karen Taylor brings it to town, everybody, you must make your way to see it so you won't miss out again. Having seen you there, we were able to reconnect, and now you're with us now. So thank you so much.
No problem. My pleasure.
So, Steve Croon, where were you born?
I was born in Harlem.
Uh-huh.
Harlem, USA, and we lived there until I left when I was around 9 years old. From there, we moved to St. Albans, Queens, which was in the 50s. Me and my brothers all left Harlem kicking and screaming because Harlem was so happening at that time.
What was going on there when you left?
Oh, from what I remember, everything was going on there. Just to be living in the projects, man, and being in that scene, that was the era of just radio.
Mm.
I just remember as a kid, especially in summertime, man, you know, everybody had their windows open and radios full blast, man. And you just heard all this great music coming out of people's windows, man.
What were you hearing?
Oh, well, I was from the Johnson Projects, and that was basically Spanish Harlem.
Okay.
So you would hear Machito, you would hear Botijo, you would hear Tito Rodriguez, you would hear Tito Puente, you would hear all that, but at the same time, you would hear the doo-wop groups, too. And then you hear, my mother also was a big fan of all of Sammy Davis Jr., Count Basie, and Duke Ellington. So you would hear it all. You know, that's the beautiful thing about those times, you know, especially in New York, man, music, man, was just 100% of everything. It depends on what block you are. You turn the corner and you hear this, you turn the corner, you know? And then when we moved to Queens, I was like, oh my God, where are we going? And little did I know that Queens was going to turn out to be this great migration of all these great jazz artists and all, you know? And on my block, I lived on Foch and 116th Avenue, right off of Murray Boulevard. Right on my block, on the corner, there was this great producer by the name of Henry Glover.
Oh.
Henry was, at that time, this is like the early 60s and all, he was this great producer, like almost like Quincy Jones. He was doing King Records, so he had James Brown.
Okay, yeah.
He brought James Brown out to Queens. He worked with Dinah Washington. Red Fox was on that label.
Wow.
He was also working with Morris Levy, so he was doing Roulette Records.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
And, I mean, he was just doing all kinds of stuff. And he produced for the Cleftones, Heart and Soul. He wrote Drowning My Own Tears. I mean, he was just amazing. And as a child, he always liked me, because I would come by his house and just be like, Mr. Glover. And he's seen how much I like music. He became like an uncle to me. And as I grew, he saw how interested I was in the music. He would let me come to rehearsals and all. I remember one time in his basement, I mean, I'm not standing outside, and I'm hearing this acapella come out of the basement. And they were singing Ridgefield from the Sunset. And he comes up and I said, Mr. Glover, who's that? And he said, wow, the Cleftones. I'm recording them and they're going to do a song I arranged for them called Heart and Soul. He said, don't stay down here, you family. Come on down. He let me come downstairs and hear this rehearsal.
Oh.
And to this day, I was about 15 years old. I never forgot that. I mean, I felt like so important and so honored. But I mean, around the corner from him was Eddie Locke, Joy Davis.
Wow.
Prez, Lester Young was four blocks away. His son was a very good friend of mine, so I used to come and visit him, and I see his pops come out every now and then with his little hat and his, you know, saxophone and all. I'm like, oh, my God, that's the Prez, you know.
Uh-huh.
And everybody, I mean, Count Basie was four blocks away.
Wow.
Arthur Price.
Wow.
So, and at that time, I knew at that age that I wanted to be a musician. I was just, like, so full of myself and so happy, you know.
Were you already playing percussion, or were you playing something else?
No, actually, when I first started, I was, like, around 11 or 12, me and my brother. My brother was the one instrumental in for me doing all this stuff because he was super talented. He was like 2 years older than me. His name was Bobby Crone. And Bobby was like the life of the party. Everybody knew my brother and everything. And we started off with a doo-wop group, singing group. And at that age, you know, I used to sing like Frankie Lyman.
Uh-oh.
I had that real high voice. So they had me. I was 12 years old. I was the lead singer. We were singing all the Frankie songs. You know.
Wow.
We had a nice little group. We performed all around, and that's when Henry Glover came in. I came to him and said, Mr. Glover, you got to record us. And he looked, and he was so nice to us. He was saying, look, guys, you know, you stay in school, do your things. But then he also told us, you got to start listening to the Ink Spots and listening to groups that really sing like barbershop harmony. And I mean, he gave us some great advice. And he said, come back next year, let me hear you again. And he was always taking his time to kind of help us, you know. But that's what the bug bit me. And after that, being my father always playing, we always had a great Latin collection. My father and mother both from Puerto Rico. They're first generation here.
Okay. Where in particular are they from?
Well, my mother's from Ponce, and my father's from Santurce.
Okay.
My father's father is from Curaçao. Curaçao is like almost the other side of Venezuela, like South America. And he was a merchant marine, and he used to go to Puerto Rico quite a bit. He started a family there. So, you know, it's amazing because he died very young at around 27 years old. So,
wow.
You know, we really never got to meet him or anything like that. So he's been this mystery to only have one picture of him, you know.
Oh, my.
But I know the family in Curaçao, so that's kind of very good and helpful. And all,
oh, yeah.
My father had this amazing collection, and my brother got the bug first. He got the Tito Puente bug, and my father bought him some timbales.
Oh.
He was around 14, and I made him teach me.
Okay.
And yeah. What he taught me, I went, oh, man, this happened. So we started playing, and then I started playing. He played the timbales, and then he started playing trombone.
Oh.
So you play the timbales, I'll do the trombone. And we started a little group and everything, you know. We had the Coon Brothers Latin Jazz Sextet.
All right, then.
And it was funny because later on with that group, we had some great players who played with us and all. Jay Spaulding had to play with us.
Wow.
We had quite a few. This guy named Jose Fernandez. Great, great conguero.
Well, James Spaulding is a Queens guy.
He's in Queens, but he was in Brooklyn.
Okay.
During that time is when he lived right by, you know, Freddie Hubbard. They lived all around President. And we were playing in this club in Brooklyn. And from there, I got the bug and I started leaning more with the congas and all, you know, because my brother said to me, wow, man, I think that's where you should stay, bro. I like you here. You know, that's your voice.
Oh, nice.
And I kind of stuck with that. And then percussion came in because I started listening to Brazilian music. And I was so fascinated with the percussion, the sound, man. These guys, I was just amazed how, you know, you could add all this color color and sound to the music and make it sound happen, and the music is still swinging, you know?
Right.
Luckily, I was able to meet this brother by the name of Don Romão. I met him in 1972.
Okay.
And he came here with Sergio Mendes earlier.
Yes.
And I saw his name with that, and I was very fascinated with him because he was very unique Brazilian Indian looking brother, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Then he started playing with Weather Report.
Right.
I went, whoa, now this is really killing. And I got to meet him and hung out with him once. I went to his house and I told him, you know, I'm studying percussion. I play kumbhas. So he said, come on by. I got everything in the basement and we could jam. And
wow.
We came and played. And for the first time we played, he said, man, you know, you got a nice groove. You got a nice concept. You're in the pocket. Come on by and we could just practice and all have fun. And I came by and started practicing with him. And I ended up in one of his first groups, Atmosphere. Came through Dom Salvador. I met him in the beginning there, Portinho, Ciro Batista.
Wow.
All these cats, man, Duduka de France.
Wow.
All these cats came through Don Romão. I mean, you know, they came from Brazil and they would go through him, you know, because he was like the cat that was establishing, you know, the foundation, you know?
Right.
Yeah, it was an amazing time. And then I got to hear Ayrton, forget about it. He just drove me nuts. I said, wow, look at this, man. This, you know, you can make magic with this, you know?
This is true.
I also studied congas for a while with Tommy Lopez. Tommy was the one who played with Eddie Palmieri when they had La Perfecta, Deco,
yes,
when they had Manny Oquendo. This cat was the master of just laying it down and playing one drum, man.
Mm.
He always told me, if you can't do it one drum, man, you know, he said it's easy doing with two or three, but he said play with one drum. And he has a point that everything is in that one drum.
That's right.
It calls for a lot more focus. And it kind of makes you a little more responsible for the crew, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Tommy was a great teacher. I was lucky to be around him and learn some things. And another one of his students is now a very good friend of mine, Jembo Cornell. Jembo was studying with Tommy at the same time. That's where I met him. Because of that, we always became, and we are to this day, you know, very good friends. And he's also a great player. He was Tommy's favorite.
Oh, okay.
And for good reasons. Actually, to me, I always consider myself very fortunate to be able and open to so much different kinds of music.
Sure. And on that subject, what brought you to focusing a lot of your playing in the R&B arena and eventually working with Luther Vandross?
Happened to me. The stars lie. think about
my first big break. Before that, I was working dances, and, you know, at that time, too, especially in the 60s and 70s, the bar scene was happening. All the bars had music four nights a week.
You know? First, there were bars
that
hosted music.
Yeah, that's right. But then they were happening. I mean, that was the neighborhood thing, you know?
Mm-hmm, yes.
And I played with a lot of different types of groups, and most of the bands that you played with them, you played all kinds of music. You would play a little Latin, you'd play Calypso, you'd play, you know?
Uh-huh.
Especially in Brooklyn, because Brooklyn was the big melting pot, you know? And then this guy by the name of Crusher Bennett, percussionist, and during that time, he was doing a lot of jingles and record dates. He was like right after Ralph McDonald.
Okay, yes.
The vein.
Yes.
So he recorded with Luther on that first record.
Never Too Much.
Never Too Much. And he didn't like to travel because he was making a lot of money just doing commercials and stuff.
Oh.
So Luther was having auditions, and he told Luther about me, and they called me up for the audition. And I came in, and it was funny, man, because I come in, and Luther's just sitting down, and he would never really look at you. He would just sit down and have his eyes like anything except looking at you. So it was kind of deep, you know?
Mm.
But we were doing the rehearsal. Out of the blue, he was doing a house about the home to begin, like, dum, 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 dum.
Uh-huh.
And I played a rain tree.
Oh, the
he
rain
stick. Dum, 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 dum. And I went, he looked right at me. He looked right at me.
Wow.
And he said, you got the gig.
Wow.
You got the gig. And then later on, I found out that one of his good friends was Carlos Alomar. And Carlos is a very good friend of mine, so...
And who is Carlos Alomar?
A guitar player. He's the one that did all the stuff with David Bowie. Actually, he was his musical director for a while.
Oh, okay.
So I got in there, and that was a real blessing because that whole organization, man, I mean, the group itself, I'm so proud that I got to play with at a time with musicians of that caliber and level, man, that I'll never forget it, you know? You know, Nat Alley Jr., musical director, Skip Anderson, the original drummer was Yogi Horton, and then it became Ivan Hamden.
Okay.
And the original guitar player was Doc Powell, then it became Phil Hamilton. The original bass player, the first one we had, I'd say, was Tinker Barfield. And then after Tinker came Byron Miller.
Okay.
Man, what a sound.
Did you play with him up until his transition?
I played with him for 20 years. I left in 2000.
Okay.
I think it was 2001 because I started, it was 20 years. I started in 81.
Okay.
And I stayed in 2001. What I learned, that was like going to school for me, education I learned, because that was really top shelf, being on the road, playing the biggest stages, the biggest arenas, set of vocals, and at that kind of intensity, and television shows, and then doing record dates with them and all. So it was really a great growing period for me. And also, financially, it allowed me to afford to become a musician. You know what I mean? I didn't have to worry about having a job.
Right.
Which is a very good thing. I mean, when you have stability like that, it's very helpful. At the same time, about 8 years later, the same guy, Crusher, was working with Ron Carter.
Ah, okay.
And Ron wanted him to go on the road with him, and he didn't want to leave either because he was still at the height of doing what he was doing. And he said, Steve, try it. Maybe it'll work for you. And I met Ron, and Ron said, yeah, you can get the gig. I said, well, look, I work with Luther, too. He said, well, when you can't make it, you send me a sub.
Okay.
So he allowed me to have a sub. So I was with Ron for 20 years, too. I stayed with him to about 2007.
Wow. I noticed that you have a few recordings with him. There was one in particular that I really, really liked. That's When Skies Are Gray.
That's a great record.
It is.
Great record. The first time I got to play it, and I think part of the reason why Harvey Mason played on that record.
Yes, exactly. And Stephen Scott on piano.
Stephen Scott was, I recorded a couple of records with Stephen Scott.
Yes, you did.
Stephen Scott is a monster.
Yes.
I was going to say was.
Yeah, right?
He is, because I haven't seen him around. I don't know what happened. He's super talented guy. Out of all the young cast who was here, I thought he was scheduled to be the next Kenny Kirkland. I mean, he's really had an incredible voice, man. He was an amazing player, and he was a good writer, man. And we did a record, too, called Beautiful Things.
And that's the one I was thinking of, because one of our radio friends down the dial, Wilda Rivera,
uses it
as her outro. That's right.
Yeah, for the cruise.
That's her closing theme, yeah.
That's her closing. It's been there for years.
Yeah, exactly.
That says a lot, you know?
Yeah.
But that group, it was me, him, Ron, and Harvey, and I really liked that record. I think we played some beautiful stuff on it.
Oh, yeah.
Best Summer in Muchos. Oh, man, gorgeous.
Well, see, I have my own favorites, you know. Actually,
okay.
Caminando.
Yeah, okay.
Caminando. And that's one of Ron's songs.
Listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Sugar My Bowls, the name of this program. Our guest this evening is Stephen Croon. What you're listening to right now is Ron Carter. This is Caminando by Ron Carter from When Skies Are Gray. That's Ron Carter on bass, Stephen Scott on piano, Harvey Mason on drums, and our guest Stephen Croon on percussion. This is a 2000 Blue Note Records release. Before this, we heard La Mesa from Stephen Scott's The Beautiful Thing. That was released in 1997 on Verve Records. Before that, we heard The Night I Fell in Love by Luther Vandross. That's the title track from the 1985 Sony Epic Records release. Before that, we heard Dom Romao in his selection Piparapara from Hotmosphere. That's a 1996 Pablo Records release. Before that, we heard Core Niña from the group Opa, from their release Golden Wings. That's a 1976 Milestone Records release. Before that, we heard I Know You Do by Stephen Croon from his latest release On the One. That's 2014 Croonatune Records. And before that, we heard our theme I Want a Little Sugar in My Bowl by Nina Simone. Stay tuned. Coming up soon, after a little more information from Stephen Croon, we're going to go to On the Bandstand with our associate producer, Hank Williams. And then we'll go into the second hour. Still talking about Ron Carter. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl. Stay tuned.
You know, I gave wrong titles.
Oh, did you?
Thank you very much.
I was wondering how, because I didn't think he was.
I gave him the titles for that and some of the Brazilian stuff.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just like I learned so much with Luther. Mm-hmm. On the other side, with Rollin, I learned everything that I didn't get from Luther, I was getting from Rollin on the other side. Because with the R&B, you know, you play and all, but it's all focused on the sound behind the one artist, the singer.
Right.
And it's a little more limited. With Ron and with the jazz, you were able to get more involved and be more personal.
Good evening, jazz fans. This is Hank Williams, and welcome to On the Bandstand for September 14th. In this segment of the show, we bring you aerial listings of Suge and My Bold guests so you can experience them live. This week's guest is percussionist Steve Kroon. There are no immediate shows to announce, but as always, we'll keep you posted. And it's a light music schedule this week, but there are opportunities to see Suge guests in action. Saxophonist Gary Bartz will be appearing at Smoke from September 19th to 21st with the Larry Willis All-Stars as part of a tribute to McCoy Tyner. See smokejazz.com for info. Looking ahead, saxophonist Billy Harper will be appearing at the Blue Note on September 23rd and 24th with the Cookers. Also at the Blue Note is saxophonist Lou Donaldson, who leads a quartet for one night only on September 25th. See BlueNote.net for details on both the Cookers and Lou Donaldson show. That's BlueNote.net. That's all for this week. If you missed anything, you can see the listings at the Suge and My Bowl blog. Go to SugeandMyBowl.org and click the link for the blog. Tonight's playlist and audio from this and previous shows are on the website as well. Remember that WBAI Radio still needs your help. If you like what we do, help us stay on the air by pledging whatever you can and consider becoming a WBAI buddy with a monthly pledge. See the Support WBAI link on our website at sugarandmybowl.org to find out more. This is Hank Williams signing off. We'll see you next week, September 21st, both on air and online on the Bandstand.
This is Bobby Humphrey. You're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.
And with Ron Carter, I got to also solo more and be able to create my ideas, develop my solo in itself. Because, you know, when you're in a smaller arena, people right on you and all, it gives you a whole other vibe. I mean, at times, you're the artist just like the artist is. You have your moments. And he would always tell me, Steve, just because you're playing percussion doesn't mean you're not responsible for the direction the music can go.
Mm-hmm, right.
If you feel something at a moment, get in it. Through that, I did learn a lot of things, man. It gave me a lot of confidence. Well, I got to admit, from Ron, I learned a lot of stuff of mastering yourself, your own concept, and your instrument where you want to sound.
Now, there's one recording that you did with Ron Carter. It was titled Friends. Now, that, there was more of a European classical focus.
But it's a gorgeous record.
Sure. How was that for you playing? Because that, you know, you do a lot of Latin jazz flavor. So how was that?
When I play toys, I mean, you know, one thing is playing congas and bongos and timbales and stuff like that. That's one different type. type of thing. But when you play toys and sounds, it's a different thing. What you do with that, and I try to explain this, usually when I do clinics or when I speak to different percussionists or young people who ask me about it, I tell them a percussionist is two things. He's a chef and he's a painter. What I mean you're a chef is that you have all the spices and ingredients, and you have to know how to add them. You got to know when to put the pepper, when to put the salt, when you put a little bay leaf.
Right.
You know when to stir it, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And then you're also a painter. You know when you need to put a cloud, you know when you need to put a little water. And Don told me something very interesting. He said, there's certain tunes where you only play water sounds. You don't play nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
There's other tunes where you only play shaking sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And some things you only play wooden sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that to be very, very smart and interesting. One of the best compliments I ever received was from Tony Bennett.
Oh.
Tony came with, off playing with Ron at the Blue Note. And Tony Bennett came, and because him and Tony are good friends. So Tony was upstairs right by, you know where the phone is, right by the bathroom?
Yes.
And he was standing right under there, man. And, you know, this guy's got an aura that's incredible, man.
Mm.
I mean, he just stands and doesn't say anything. He's just got that, you know. Like all those guys, Ron has it too.
Right.
Know? I come up and I look at him, man. And he looked at me and said, "Were you the guy playing percussion?" And I said, "Yes, sir." I said, "Wow, Tony Bennett, you know, in my house, man, it is the true thing. My mother, my family, man, and we had nothing but Tony Bennett records, man. They love Tony Bennett." I said, "You were a favorite in my house growing up." He said, "Well, let me tell you something, young man." He said, "You play percussion like Picasso paints."
Ooh, nice. That
I
is.
Said, man, can I quote that?
Yeah,
right.
Excellent.
And you know what? I played a track on his new record with Lady Gaga.
Wow.
I was so honored because now I feel like it's come full circle. You know, I got to at least get to work with him one time in my life, you know?
Right.
So that's a big feather, you know?
Oh, that's amazing. When you worked with Luther Vandross, is that what led to your working with Aretha Franklin?
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. Because when I worked with Luther, because of working with Luther, I got to do a lot of other different record dates. I got the different producers and all. They got to know me from that. Because Luther produced Aretha a few times.
Right.
One of the records that he produced with her, I was on. And then when she did her record, Who's Zooming Is Who, she had us. Well, I mean us. She had me, Nat, Doc, and Yogi, and the bass player, Brothers Johnson, the one who plays bass, Lewis.
Lewis, yes. Lewis.
Yeah,
Lewis.
We backed her up on two of the songs on that, too.
Okay.
So that's how I got in there with her, too. And then at the time, too, I started working with a good friend of mine, Hubert Eaves.
Yes.
He produced the D-Train. The D-Train thing was me, him, D-Train, and basically his son, because most of the stuff was synthesized. And Hubert did himself, and his son did the drums, and he did the bass on things like that. And then he had different people like Tree play guitar. And
tell everybody who Hubert Eaves III is.
He's a great number one piano player. He came here, and first I've heard with him, he was playing with Gary Bartz, that big album, The River.
Yes.
That's him playing the piano on it.
I've known Rivers.
Right. From that, he started playing with all the jazz cats, and he was very young. And then from there, he went on to playing a lot with Entombe. And he was part of Entombe's crew, and they played with everybody at that time. I mean, they were back in Stephanie Mills and doing a lot of stuff with Roberta. So he was doing all that kind of stuff, a lot of studio stuff and all. And then he started this D-Train, with the singer D-Train.
Right.
I think his real name is James Williams.
Yes.
A wonderful guy and an amazing singer, and now he's all over the place. He's a big-time jingle singer and background singer for everybody. And, wow, the rest is history. I mean, they came on and it just blew up. Those records are really, really smoking, man. And actually, Luther became a fan, and he started co-writing with Luther.
Okay.
Yeah. And he's still around now. He doesn't live far from me. I see him every now and then.
Well, he worked with you on the recording, Without a Doubt, Sin Duda.
Right. Yeah, he worked on the first time Ever I Saw Your Face.
Yes.
The remake I did with Carla Cook.
Yes.
the first time ever I saw your face. I thought the sun rose in your eyes. And the moon and stars were the gifts you gave to the dark. Skies, my love, to the dark and empty skies. But all ever I kissed your lips, and felt the earth move in my hand, like the trembling heart of a captive bird that was there at my command, my love, that was there at my command. The earth and last
that thing came out fabulous.
It's beautiful. It's a wonderful arrangement.
It's a wonderful arrangement. Me and him kind of put that together at his house because he has a studio.
Okay.
And I came there and I said, I got this idea. And the first idea, I put down the drum idea to it, the percussion, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I played a cajon first, then I played the congas.
Okay.
And established that groove. And then we built it from there. And then Carla came in and just killed it.
Well, you worked with Carla before on Simply Natural.
I worked with Carla. I was on the road with her for a good 10 years. As a matter of fact, Carla works with me, too, in my band. Whenever I use, when I do jazz vespers, I either have her or Lilius White. Matter of fact, that brings me back to a gig I'm doing October 19th for the Brooklyn Jazz Consortium.
And where is that going to be? On the 19th?
Yeah, I believe it's going to be, the whole thing didn't come out yet.
But okay.
They told me I got the gig. I think it's going to be at Mega Evers.
Okay.
And it's for their big annual, the anniversary party.
Okay, that's Sunday, October 19th.
Absolutely.
Possibly at Metro Evers.
And I'm going to have Carla there. And I believe for the first time, we're going to do the first time I ever saw your face. We didn't play it live.
Oh, okay.
And I want to showcase it there because it's such a great vibe we have on it, you know?
That it is. Speaking of first time ever I saw your face, you also recorded with Roberta Flack on her release, Roberta?
Right.
How did that come about?
That came about because of Jerry Bonds.
Okay.
And his sister's name is Catrice. Jerry and Catrice Bonds. They're the ones that brought me in because they were doing the production on it.
Steve, your decision to record as a leader, how did that come about?
Well, after my first CD, I wasn't really thinking of just doing a band, but I just wanted to do a recording. Because I've always wanted to produce. I was always kind of a huge fan also of Quincy Jones. One of the person I admired a lot, too, was Barry Gordy, what he did with Motown. I just wanted to do my own record. I had that inside of me that I wanted to do it. So my first record, which is entitled In My Path, that record, I call it my Quincy Jones record because it was actually my first, so I didn't really have just a group concept in mind. So I did different things. I had vocals on it. I have John Lucien on it. I have Paulette McWilliams singing on it, Lisa Fisher.
Yeah.
I used all Luther background. Actually, that record came about, me and Ivan Hamden, the drummer with Luther, we were on the road, and I said, man, I want to do a record. And he said, man, okay, we got plenty of time on the road. You know, a lot of times we ain't doing nothing. So we would just see that as a synthesizer in the room, and we just get together, and we kind of pumped out all these tunes and these concepts. And I used a lot of the guys in the band, you know.
Hmm.
We got off and on, we went in, and I added some different cats. But I used a lot of people around me. It's a great record. I'm very proud of it.
steal of the night. That blues woman tender, so cool and so light, blowing her song. Her song, caressing my heart with her love. She captures my soul. Pity them, boom, douche, and gay.
Exactly.
But I guess that's too hard for them to understand, you know. So, in saying all that, I had the bug, though. After I did the first one, I said, I got to record again. And this one, I said, man, you know, I'm going to try to focus in more on what I want to do, what I really want to do. And my main love has always been Latin jazz, even though I like everything a lot. But I just kind of went back to my childhood. And I guess my brother talking to me, you know, he passed away. What I told you about.
Bobby.
He passed away, yeah, but I always buried him inside of me, so he's always with me. You know, I love my brother. He's really special to me. I love him. He's like his spirit was telling me, I formed the band again.
You know? Right.
So I did the second one, which is entitled Senor Croon.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people go, oh, Senor Croon, that's him. What made you think of that? But actually, I said Senor Croon because I was really giving the compliment to my father.
Oh.
You know, but I didn't want to say song for my father because that's always been done. You know?
Exactly.
So, you know, I just made everybody think I'm really talking about me, but I'm giving the credit to my dad. I produced it with Oscar Hernandez.
Yes. And I wanted to know about him. He's a writing partner.
He's a writing partner. He's produced with me. Mm-hmm. And even to this, my last CD, whenever I do a CD, I always get at least two or three tunes from Oscar.
Okay.
Whether we co-write together or he gives me one, because he's become part of the sound. And besides being a good friend, he's an amazing, amazing talent.
Tell us more about Oscar Hernandez. What's his story?
He's just a super talented cat, man. I mean, he goes way back to the Latin scene. He played with everybody. Willie Colon, Mongo, Tito Puente, Ray Barreto.
What does he play?
Piano.
Okay.
And he's arranged for all these guys. He's done some incredible, incredible arrangements for everyone I name. And now he has a Spanish Harlem Orchestra.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that's his group. And he's won 2 Grammys. And he's just amazing. And as a friend, for the first time I went to him, and I asked him, hey, man, you know, would you co-write with me? And he said, man, he was like, man, yeah, come on. You know, and he's been so wonderful and so supportive. And I learned so much from him. He's a great friend. I mean, he's really added so much to the music.
Excellent.
So after that first record, that's when I put the vibes in. The first one, Steve Nelson played vibes.
Okay.
And on that record also was the last record Mauricio Smith played on.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, he passed before the record came out.
Okay.
Great guy. You know, I've always used Ruben Rodriguez on bass.
Right.
Vince Jericho on drums. And on that record, too, I believe I have Ron Carter played on a track. Yep. Lewis Nash played on a couple of tracks.
Yes. You've played with him for a bit, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, me and him were in the group with Ron.
Right.
For about 8 years. And Houston Pearson played on My One and Only Love. He did an incredible job. Don Salvador arranged some tunes for me, and he played on it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a great record, because I put the record out, but I still wasn't working the record. You put a record out, now you got to have a band. You have a vehicle for what you're doing, or you're just putting something out. And that's what I kind of felt and I learned. And I said, hey, man, I'm going to do my own group, and the group is going to be around this groove and this vibe, you mm-hmm. know?
Well, it seems like your core group presently has been for the last...
Get to that. Let me get to that.
Well, may I? Please.
Okay, go ahead. Wow, I was having so much fun by myself. Okay.
Can we play together?
Yeah, we can play together.
It appears as though your core group involves Brian Carrot on
drums,
Craig Rivers on flute, Ruben Rodriguez on basses, electric and acoustic, and Igor
Atalita
on keyboards.
Right. And anyone else is extra guest. I had, like, Tim Reeves on one CD. I used Bobby Francesini on one. Roger Byam I used on one. So I bring in different people, you know. I had Ron Blake on a couple. I always add a different horn player to kind of give it another kind of vibe. But my core group is that. My sextet is who you mentioned. Actually, once Oscar formed his group, he moved to L.A. And I had to get a new keyboard player. But I needed someone that not only is going to do the records, but be able to perform.
Right.
And I got Igor Atalita, incredible kid. Actually, he's my musical director.
Okay.
And co-producer and co-writer, and we do a lot of stuff together, and I work incredibly with him. I'm really happy with him. You know, we've been together now for, it seems like it's over 5 years.
Oh, excellent.
got in the group was Craig. He came from the old group, and he was the first one I got. And then Igor came. And Ruben, I've always used on my records. And I use Ruben when he's busy sometimes, and I can use him. I use a guy by the name of Walter Chavez. Oh, on drums, we forgot Diego Lopez.
Okay.
And when he can't do it, usually Vince Cherico, either one of those two, which is two excellent choices. Then Brian Carrick came along, because after Steve Nelson, I started using Brian, and that turned out to be a great choice. Not only he's just an amazing player, but he's done co-writing with me, and he's been real very instrumental to the sound. All these guys, my core group is very much a part of the sound and what I'm doing. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I got a great group, and I love working with these cats. I'm glad to say not only they're in my band and my band members, but I consider them friends, and I'm pretty sure they consider me the same, yeah. Because it's very hard having a group out here and getting work and trying to get to the next level, you know? Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
So for the support and what they bring to the table, what they've given, I commend them immensely.
With regard to On the One, I am so glad that you did George Cable's Camel Rise. I originally heard it on Bobby Hutcherson's Montera, so that was really a joy to hear on the One.
You know, thank you. It's amazing, but, you know, George lives around the corner from me.
Okay.
And I've been living here for almost 30 years.
Okay.
And we bumped into each other, and people have told us that we live close to each other. We became friends, real friends, about 3 years ago.
Okay.
And I told him, I said, hey, man, you live around the corner from me, and, I love your music, man, and my next record, I want to record a couple of your tunes. So he said, man, just walk on by the house, you know?
Wow.
So and literally, I walk on by his house, and he started playing things. When I heard Camel Ride and Phantom of the Island, I went, yeah, I got to record these two. And when I brought it to him after I finished, because, you know, when you bring people new arrangements to their tunes, you always wonder if they're going to cringe, you know? He loves them.
Oh, good.
He said, man, thank you. I wouldn't have done it that way. Well, thank you. They said, oh, great. And I'm also playing in one of his bands.
Oh, really?
When he does his George Cable songbook, because he has a trio, and when he does his George Cable songbook, he adds Steve Wilson on soprano and sax, and this young lady is vocalist, and me on percussion. Then he has Victor Lewis on drums and Effie Effie on bass. Which
that's great.
Yeah, and it's a real honor, you know, getting a chance to work with him. Because the guy, he's another one that composes beautiful, man.
Yes. Does the songbook have anything coming up soon that you know of?
Yeah, we have something coming up with us at the Kennedy Center in D.C.
Okay.
We just did last year, we did This Is Coca-Cola for a week.
Oh, wow.
He's doing Kennedy Center this November, and I'm doing it with them. I think he wants to record this group.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
And if he does, we'll probably get to work it more. But what he did was this young lady got a lot of his older songs and added the lyrics to them.
Oh.
Mr. Baggy Pants and all that stuff, man. Great stuff, man. And it sounds really good. She wrote some great lyrics.
And the name of the band is George Cable's Songbook.
Right. Okay. Getting back to how the concept of the group, and each CD has gotten me closer to, I think, perfecting our sound. The one after Señor Crone is El Más Allá. Actually, it's the first recording of that band.
Oh.
Just that band. I didn't use any other, you know, different, you know, it was Igor, Brian, myself, Craig, Vince, and Ruben. And Roger Byam played saxophone on a couple of cuts.
Okay.
And on one track, we feature Freddie Cole, I Wish You Love.
Oh, wonderful.
Which is really gorgeous.
Well, you recorded with Freddie Cole on one of his recordings.
Right. And that's how I got him to record on mine.
Excellent.
And that was also dedicated to my dad. He passed away.
Oh.
And El Más Allá means beyond. But in Puerto Rico, when they say El Más Allá, it's usually when a person passes on, they go to the other side. They say, se fue para El Más Allá. He went to the other side.
Mm-hmm.
The crossover, you know?
Okay.
So I dedicated that one to my dad. And the one after that you have is Without a Doubt, Sin Duda, which has the same band, and Bobby Franceschini's on that one.
Right.
And I think that one's a really nice recording, too.
It is. Very nice. I have... several favorites on that as well.
Yeah, one that I like too, the one that Sakaya Curtis did a tune for me on that called Mizu, which is the cha-cha, and Mizu means water in Japanese.
Agua.
Yeah, Mizu Agua. It came out beautiful.
I like the Ayerto song you do.
Yeah, that came out, and actually that was me and Brian Carrot. We arranged that, and we had fun with that, you know?
Excellent.
And on that, it's the same cast, but Diego Lopez played drums on that one.
Okay.
And then the last one is the same group, and Vince Chirico played drums on them.
Mm-hmm.
And I have Tim Reese on sax and flute.
And that's on the one, the last one.
On the one. I tune up, they're playing a lot. They're liking a lot, too, is the ballad, As Time Goes By. I heard that one day when I was walking, man, the melody, and I said, you know, because when you play old classics, you try to play something that you know is going to set people off by the first note. I mean, Casablanca, come on.
Yes, it's a classic. Exactly.
I mean, you know, I had all the gin and juke joints, you had to end up here, you know.
Walk in the mine.
Yeah, it has all those, you know. And, you know, if you notice, he didn't turn around a lot of times.
Right.
Is she standing behind me? He said, yes, boy, she's right behind you. God, I just love that. That's such a classic, man, you know.
Wow.
And the clothes and the whole thing, you know?
Sure.
And when you hear that boop, bee, ba, boop, 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 that just, you know, that wiped me out, you know? I like to do things like that.
What else are you going to do with this release with regard to On the One? Do you have any touring plans for that?
Well, I'm still having to book my own gigs and all that. It's very hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I do the best I can. I'm hoping to get somewhere down the line a booking agent, to get me in these festivals and all, you know?
Because I actually wanted to talk to you about the fact that this was released on Croonatune Records.
All my CDs are on my label.
Right. And you're also booking your gigs. How is that for you? How is it first, having Croonatune Records?
Well, having Croonatune Records is, I told you about Barry Gordy.
Right.
And I told you about Motown. And once again, my old friend Henry Glover, well, I could call him Uncle Henry. Back then in the 60s, he was one of the first Afro-American brothers that had a record label. Because back then you couldn't have a record label.
Right.
You know, only the big guys existed. You couldn't even get publishing. And he had Glover Records. And I said, wow, you got your own label. He said, yes, Steve. He said, it ain't no easy thing. But, you know. And I was just fascinated with that. And Motown. And I tried to get with other labels. And I went to a lot of labels when I had the demos done and all like that. And I was turned down. And I said, I can't wait on these people for me to move with my career.
Right.
So I'm going to do my own label thing. And I did. And I'm glad I did it. It's costly and expensive.
Yeah.
But it's also my life.
Right.
It's also my legacy. And the mere fact that I own it kind of feels good to me.
Yeah.
So I own something.
Sure, exactly.
To whatever it's worth. And I'm on the radio.
Right.
Big time.
Right.
I mean, we're on the jazz charts. All the stations play me.
And you're on Sugar in My Bowl right now.
That's right. Across the board, all the DJs have been very, very good to me.
Sure.
It's because of the music.
Right.
The next part is to really get it out there. Even with me booking, I've gotten some pretty good things, but I really need to get into the mainstreams and the festivals. And,
right.
Because I think my band's worthy of it, but you got to get into that stable that can get you there,
Sure, of course.
So hopefully soon come. If anybody's listening, the promoter, please call me. My website is...
That's right. Steve Croon.
www.stevecroon.com.
That's KROON.com.
Absolutely. And it's STEVEKROON.
There you go.
And we're open for everything.
Excellent.
But we did a jazz standard this year. I've done the Saratoga Jazz Festival. I've done Bam Cafe. I'm going to do Smoke. I'm doing quite a few clubs and places around. So we were making our rounds, but I just want to spread it out and get it out there.
Of course. And by the way, the vocalist in George Cable's songbook is Sarah Elizabeth Charles.
That's her name.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you for looking that up.
Yeah.
She studies where he teaches at the New School.
Yes. All right. Well, Steve Croon, thank you so much for joining Sugar in My Bowl and sharing
your
music.
We're through.
Is there something you want to add to share with the listeners about Steve Croon and music?
Yeah, I want to thank all your listeners for the support and listening to your great station. And I want to thank you for sharing my music with your great audience.
Well, thank you so much, Steve Croon, for sharing your music with all of us. And hopefully that circle expands even more.
That's what circles do.
That's right. Thank you, Steve Kerr.
And as always, on the one.
WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Sugar in My Bowl is the name of this program. And you just heard an exchange between me, Joyce Jones, and our guest, Stephen Croon, percussionist and band leader. What we're listening to right now is his version of As Time Goes By from his latest release, On the One, which was released on his label, Croonatune Records, this year, 2014. Before that, we heard George Cable's Camel Rise, which is also from On the One. And before that, we heard the title track, On the One. Before that, we heard Señor Croon from Stephen Croon. That was the title track. 2002 Croonatune Records release. Before that, we heard The Wind, which featured John Lucien. And that's from In My Path, En Mi Camino, a 2010 Croonatune Records release. Before that, we heard The First Time Ever I Saw Your Face, which featured Carla Cook. And that was from Without a Doubt, Sin Duda, a 2011 Croonatune Records release. And before that, we heard On the Bandstand. And next week, we'll, as mentioned, we will be rebroadcasting a program that featured the now late Joe Sample. Stay tuned. Coming up next is La Nueva Alternativa. And we will be back next week, September 21st. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web.
This is Sonia Sanchez. I urge you to give your generous support to listener-sponsored community radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.